From Empty Set Studios in San Diego, California, welcome to the Friday Fix.
Hey, junkies, this is A Real Girl bringing you this week's Friday Fix from the Lair of Doom. I have Scott Sigler with me. Say hello, Scott Sigler.
Hello, I am Scott Sigler. I'm an author. I write books. I do fun stuff. I can juggle possums.
I was going to say, you know, I don't know that you have to say you're an author. I think a lot of people probably know that.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe the lead in about the possum is a good thing.
It is a good thing. And what do you do, ma'am?
I am incredulous about everything you say pretty much all of the time.
And that's your job. That's what you do for a living.
Essentially, that and make a lot of travel plans.
A lot of contracts. Yes. This is, of course, this is A. Kovacs, A Real Girl herself, and we are co-hosting the Friday Fix today. We have a very specific topic.
We do.
Very specific topic to discuss today.
We're going to war.
Empty set. Yeah, that's strong. That's a better lead than I had, which was we're going to get a broom and clean up an airport. That's all I had going on.
Well, yeah. I mean, to be fair, we're not really going to war. We are going to talk about civil war.
Yeah, and I'm also not cleaning up that airport because that was in Chicago, and you know how the unions are. Forget about it.
I know. Just the banks get involved.
Nobody wants that. We went and we saw Civil War, Captain America: Civil War, which I don't know why they didn't. Why they call it a Captain America movie and not just another friggin' Avengers movie? I thought that was confusing.
Yeah, I mean, because it's. I mean. Well, okay, we should start by saying this is a spoiler cast. We are going to talk about spoilers. There's no way around that. We can't talk about the movie unless we talk about things that happened in the movie. So
this is just for you if you've seen Captain America: Civil War.
Or if you don't care about spoilers. If you don't care what happens in the plot, you don't care about our thoughts about things you haven't seen, great. But otherwise, spoiler alert, please turn this off. We think you're lovely, gorgeous. You smell like flowers. Come back on Sunday.
You smell an awful lot like flowers.
Now I'm uncomfortable again.
So you guys can go watch it and come back and listen to this, or you can obviously listen if you don't give a crap. But if you've actually watched this big budget tentpole spectacular,
we're ready
to talk about it.
Yeah, and I mean to your statement before, why isn't that just the Avengers?
Yeah.
I mean, I think part of it is because it is Cap's choices that drive the team throughout the movie, and especially at the end of the movie, his decisions. He's the one who's the moral compass there.
But isn't it getting a little weird at this point? I mean, I the math I had, 13 superpowered people in that movie. 13, if you count Crossbones, the villain in the opening segment. That's a huge cast, and they handled that pretty well, getting... Mm-hmm. Everybody got a decent amount of screen time. Everybody had their snappy one-liners if they were that kind of a person. I mean, pretty much everybody, it's mandatory. It's Marvel. You have to have a snappy one-liner insult.
Sure.
Everybody got that. But the actual parts with just Captain America following his arc, 14, Bucky. I forgot Bucky.
Bucky.
Yeah. I mean, it was. It's just, they're just kind of more Avengers movies now. I'm not even sure why they call them Captain America movies at this point.
Okay. I mean, I think they called that one a Captain America movie because it's Captain America's story, which is what
but it's not said. Captain America's story,
but it totally is. He's the moral compass of this story. He makes the choices that put them into civil war. He makes the choices that resolve the story in the end. He's the one who has you have to take him on faith until he proves it to you, but he's the one who chose the right thing. He's the one who did the right thing. He's the one who was the superhero.
It's morally ambiguous. We don't know what the right thing is, especially by the end of the movie. Why didn't they call it Captain America and Iron Man Civil War? That would have made more sense.
Well, again, because Iron Man is doing something that he... I'll say this as many times as you like. I think Iron Man is doing what he thinks people think is the right thing, but his morality and his moral compass may be compromised, and he might be choosing for the greater good instead of choosing what he believes in his heart to be the right thing. And they're superheroes. Like, that's the difference here, right? So Captain America is making the difficult choice because he's going against everybody's preference. Mm-hmm. By everybody, I mean normal citizens and governments and whatnot. But he believes he's making the only sound moral choice he can make. And that isn't actually true of the other superheroes in this movie. They waffle a little bit and then decide like they're either going to go with Cap or they're going to go with
Iron Man. And they decide to sign the Skovkovikov Accords. Yeah.
Yeah.
Slovakian Accords, I think, is
definitely
what it was called.
Not Slovakian Accords.
Skull Accords. Just pitch between your cheek and gum gives you real superhero pleasure.
No. Yeah. No.
That's going back to 80s advertising, folks. If you recognize that one, you are an old fart. I've got 5 points, 4 points now to cover.
Okay.
They are number one, shaky cam. No, it's 5 points. Number one, shaky cam. Number two, Black Panther. Number three, we'll talk about the Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Number four, that cray-cray plot.
Well, I'm not so sure it was as crazy as all that. I think it might have been, you know, edited. You and I actually often come down differently on different sides of this, because I feel like more and more comic book movies are becoming more comic book like, and I'm saying that as a novice, almost non-existent comic book reader.
Okay.
Part of the reason I didn't read comic books when I was younger is that they were too fast. Mm-hmm. You take a look, you read the panels, you can kind of look at the whole page at once. You get six bits of information, then you move on. Maybe you get three if it's a three-paneled page. I would have read 97 comic books a week when I was a kid, but I couldn't afford to do that. So this idea that the plot is these high-level 35,000-foot passes at little blinks of information, to me, looks like a comic book.
Okay. Okay.
And to you, like, you're like, well, okay. I mean, you have this specific problem.
I'm actually looking at it from a different perspective, and that's having written two trilogies now and understanding when you have so many moving parts in your kit and all of these moving parts have to come together, and especially in a superhero movie, they all have to get a certain amount of screen time. Everybody has to impact the plot at least a little bit, either by a decision or an influence or a particular action. The ability to get all these things to come together on screen is super duper tricky. And having written Pandemic, all the threads you have to bring together, sometimes as a creator, you're like, oh my God, this feels so contrived because you have to hit all of these elements. And I almost felt those two things. I could see that the Russo brothers, who are the screenplay writers, man, they had a monumental task to get all this stuff on screen, and they did a pretty darn good job of it. And then we don't know what scenes were cut. That's always the biggest thing when the plot's a little iffy. It's like, it's not that bad, but there are segments where you're like, well, that's convenient.
Right. And the particular thing we talked about before turning on the microphones here is you have a big problem with why was the villain looking for the December 1991 information for that, what happened on that day. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm like, all right, he's a toss-away villain, right? He, at least for this movie, he's going to go in that crazy glass cage, and you see him here, there, and everywhere. And, you know, what's important about him is that he's chasing a piece of information, to me. Mm-hmm. To you, you want to know, well, why? How did that all happen? But for me, I'm like, he had to get them all to the crazy-ass lair, the opposite of the Fortress of Solitude, the Fortress of Fuckitude or something, up in the middle of nowhere in Siberia. He had to get them there. This is totally contrived.
Yeah.
Have you read comic books?
I have. I've read a lot of comic books.
There's so much information left out of comic
books. You're right. That's a good point. Well, yeah, they are screenplay movies themselves. There's only so many lines of dialogue on each page, and they're very short.
Right. So for me, I actually don't, I don't have a lot of history with comic books because I couldn't read them because I couldn't afford to, essentially. I couldn't afford to read that many comic books in a week that would occupy my time because they were so high level, right? So once I sort of adjusted my expectations, a comic book movie that looks and acts like a comic book makes sense to me. And I actually appreciate the shaky cam more than I did before for the same reason.
Okay, we'll come back to the plot. We'll finish up with our discussions on the plot. Shaky cam. You didn't mind it so much. I wanted to punch Ultron in his metal nuts. I mean, if he's not even around. I want someone to answer for my rage. The day after I saw it, you had already seen it.
Yeah.
I got out of the theater. I called you to discuss the higher points of this. And of course, I was frothing at the mouth over the show. I was rabid. I had foamy mouth.
Well, take your word for that.
About the shaky cam. But then in our conversation, we had an interesting thought. Now, at one point I thought shaky cam was a throwaway crutch for actors who couldn't do action. Like Hunger Games was the worst, like the early example of really bad. Like you have no idea what's happening in these fight scenes and no idea whatsoever. And then that movie made a ton of money. Then other movies with shaky cam made a ton of money. And now two things. Number one, it is obvious that producers and directors think shaky cam is what people want to see because those movies made money. And then number two, if you're 23 or 24 and under, every action movie you've ever seen in the theater has shaky cam.
Yeah, and I think that there are two other important points. One is, one of the things that seems to have driven you crazy about Civil War is you could see enough of the choreography to know they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that you would have liked to see that whole fight. And I think part of the reason for that, oh, the dog's upstairs.
Yep.
If you hear them. Part of the reason for that is I believe in this movie, at least, one of the differences between the shaky cam fights from before and now is there's also a little stop motion in there.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a little bit of slowed down freeze frame and you see a little bit. And that's also like that's the 1960s Adam West Batman biff pow zoom moments.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a frozen second in time where you see the beauty of the choreography or whatever, and then it goes back to shaky cam. I actually think that improves. For an old geezer like me, mm-hmm. that improves the shaky cam experience. The other thing is, I think, I'm revealing myself to be a terrible fake gamer girl or fake nerd girl
mm-hmm.
because I'm not a comic book reader and I'm not a gamer.
Okay.
But I've seen a lot of people play a lot of video games, and in a lot of video games, you are sitting in the audience, much like you are when you are watching a movie,
mm-hmm.
and the view you have of the players on the screen, including yourself, is proscenium front on four-sided, you know? So that's what those look like. And what you're doing so much in video games, I think video games are a little shaky cam by nature of the medium.
Yeah. Like Halo, like when something hits you,
yeah.
I mean, it's you're all over the place.
And so maybe I think that the younger you are and the video games have matured, right? Cause obviously that didn't happen when I was a kid, which is why I have tons of friends who are my age who play a lot of video games,
mm-hmm.
but me personally, like, Atari was not as exciting as Halo. It just any Atari game was not as exciting as Halo.
No.
So for me, like, oh, that was fun, but not really for me. And I moved on to other things. But you know, like your I understand your controller can vibrate
mm-hmm.
if your tank
sure.
gets hit, things like that. So people are used to that perspective. So they already come with all this. Yeah, when things are really moving tight, things are
right.
really moving fast.
Right.
Fast things wiggle around and whatever. So I think both of those add to the viewing pleasure that you and I don't have.
And the whole gestalt of movies is changing. Clearly, I used to think, well, this will run its course and we'll get back to great action. Like John Wick did very little shaky cam.
Right.
And it's clearly, I have to give up the ghost. This is not going to happen. This is the way movies are going to look for a long time
at
with this kind of action.
Movies. For sure, superhero movies. And I think The Hunger Games, those are superheroes. I think John Wick is a super villain in a way. Like he's an assassin.
John Wick is more of an old school, that's a 70s, 80s action karate movie where you can actually follow the choreography of the action. Everything's
right.
very well timing. Action intensity, you can see what's coming next, and it's got rewatch value. I'll never watch Captain America again. But the first two fights were shaky cam, where I didn't think any was needed, and then I felt they salvaged themselves quite a bit with the airport scene, which mm-hmm. was pretty gosh darn spectacular.
So this was another thing we talked about. I think part of the reason that the airport scene was less shaky was two things. One, it was quite long. It was the longest fight scene in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And two, it needed the comic timing of Ant-Man and the Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that. You can't have super shaky stop motion fight scenes and lots of loud music and explosions and crashes and everything else and have the Spider-Man be 16 and sassy.
Yeah.
And you can't have the Ant-Man being like, I can't believe that worked. Like you can't do that because you don't get it as
right.
quickly because it moves too fast and you don't see it. So I think having both of them as part of that big fight slowed things down quite a little bit. And especially the interaction between like, yeah, normally there's not so much talking during a fight was a plot point, which I thought was hysterical.
It was funny, but if you've got Spider-Man, there's, they did that pretty well. They did nothing but talking. So mm-hmm. shaky cam, I'm going to have to lighten the hell up. Clearly.
Or you can make an old man voice and complain about it.
Kind of shaky cam. You know, I was a kid. I could watch Chuck Norris punch a guy in the mouth and you could see the tooth fly all over the place. And that's the way we liked it. So I will have to do that. Let's talk quickly about Black Panther.
Okay.
We had also in our phone conversation, an interesting point. We talked about how Henry Cavill being Superman absolutely looks the part. You see a still shot of that guy, you're like, that's dumb, man. That's the best Superman since Christopher.
Right.
That's great. But then on screen, he doesn't seem to do it for me. And then there was that funny skit they did, I think the Jimmy Kimmel show or something. They put him on Times Square with mm-hmm. a Superman shirt on and mm-hmm. nobody recognized him.
Right. Yeah.
Cause he doesn't seem to have that same movie star. He just doesn't have that thing. But Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther was just like mesmerizing. He's like perfect.
And you said it really well. You're like, so Henry Cavill might be a movie star, but he's not a superhero. He doesn't seem yet to be a superhero. Mm-hmm. But Black Panther, movie star and superhero.
Yeah, I'm like in the middle of Captain America, and I'm like, when do I get to see the Black Panther movie? That's kind of what was going on there. And that's, you know, the first time I saw Chris Evans, I thought the same thing. When do I get to see him in his own movie? But we've seen that a few times, and it's pretty cool. But so I'm very much looking forward to that.
Though I would not at all mind seeing another Chris Evans Captain America movie.
I like my favorite scene in the movie for Chris Evans was, oh my God, look at my guns as I hold this helicopter. Oh, wait a minute. You want to see the bicep? I'll switch my grip. And he switched his grip around. And he's showing those preposterous guns. I'm like, when I was in the theater, everybody laughed at that. Yeah, everybody's like, oh, come on. And everybody's pretty much applauding. Like, that's good. That's good stuff. And then there is Tom Holland as Spider-Man.
Oh, I think I think it's interesting because I'm coming to this totally, honestly, I cannot categorically talk about Spider-Man, anything like that. However, I do know enough about Spider-Man that I love the flipping of the script. I mm-hmm. love that Aunt May is not Angela Lansbury shaped, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but flipping Marissa Tomei.
And the first time I heard that, and Marissa Tomei's what, 50 now? She's in that ball, 45, so... Mm-hmm. She absolutely could be an aunt of an 18-year-old, but 19-year-old. But when we first heard, are you kidding me, Marissa Tomei as Aunt May? I was like, screw you, Marvel. This is mm-hmm. absolute bull crap. But then they wrote it into the dialogue, Robert mm-hmm. Downey's dialogue, like, you're surprisingly hot aunt. And like that, all of a sudden, I was like, okay, you guys owned it. All is forgiven.
Right. And when Peter Parker is sort of talking to Tony Stark and totally starstruck, Tony mm-hmm. Stark is totally Tony Stark. He's mm-hmm. totally like, so what you're going to do is you're going to tell Aunt Hottie that we did, you know, and he can't, Peter Parker can't even handle being in the same room with Tony Stark, much less picking up on all of that because he's a 16-year-old kid. I thought they played Spider-Man so well. I thought he did a great job. Mm-hmm. I thought that the ensemble cast played that really, really sweet and, you know, not on the nose and like really swell, I thought.
I wanted to be in a great scene. And I assume he will be, I'm not a Marvel Cinematic Universe expert, but I assume he'll be Spider-Man for upcoming movies. But yeah, I mean, it's like in my lifetime now, I've watched Spider-Man get completely reinvented 5-6 times. That gets a little tedious, but I think he's going to do a pretty good job. So as Black Panther, that is Tom Holland as Spider-Man. We've got a couple of questions that have come in for tweets, but I think we'll get to that after we talk about the plot. And I think you've covered the overall gestalt of it, which is, yeah, we want to get these guys in an awesome setting at the end of the movie. So it doesn't really matter how we get them there. We're going to kind of sort of have a plot, but it was a lot to process.
Yeah. I think maybe I didn't have nearly as much trouble with it. I think you have much more. And I believe this is almost always true of you. Mm-hmm. You are always looking You cannot help but look at the mechanics behind that, how much info. But we know, like, your books are very info heavy. Mm-hmm. Your stories are very intricately woven, and you, at some point, you know that your readers want to see the wizard behind the curtain a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Comic books are simply not that. So, ergo, comic book movies probably aren't that either. So I didn't have, in fact, much problem with the plot because, you know, they're flipping superheroes in the movie. And, you know, I think the biggest problem I had, which is I can't believe I'm saying out loud because, you know, if you're going to a superhero movie, you got to let this stuff go. Don Cheadle at the end, spoiler alert, again, I feel obligated to say at the end gets injured.
Uh-huh.
What's his
He's, gosh darn it.
I know. Well, anyway, his Iron Man weapon, secret weapon.
Super Patriot Man.
Yeah. He gets injured because his suit fails and he plummets and hits the earth, mm-hmm. which is the same physics that would kill anybody in an Iron Man suit anytime they hit the earth going faster than their skin and their internal organs can handle full fucking stop. Mm-hmm. So why does it matter?
That's the thing that bothers me.
I mean, I know I have to let it go, but why does it? My problem is this. If it didn't matter in Iron Man, mm-hmm. If it didn't matter in the Avengers, why does it matter now? Why did we have to see him do rehab?
Because that's the kind of thing that's so easily fixed. He doesn't, his suit doesn't lose full power and he's not falling at terminal velocity. It loses partial power and he hits really, really hard. Like that's a super, super easy thing to fix. And they didn't bother to fix that. So that bothers you that
well,
way.
Yeah. And the piece that bothers me is we see Iron Man on purpose hit things going that fast. And nothing happens to Tony Stark.
Well, there's obviously it's the internal dampening field.
There is no internal dampening field between my brain and my skull. Full stop,
there's
none.
There's the force field projection network lattice.
None of that exists.
That, it, oh, you, well, you know what? I'm going to go with this. You haven't read enough comic books.
That's,
so
that's
one thing
harsh,
I want to talk about in the plot.
It's really harsh.
The one thing, let's forget about the Sokovich Accords. Let's not worry about any of that stuff. And all of the things that seem to fall into place for Zemo, the bad guy, Zemo's plan hinges on a ton of things. It just have to go a certain way.
Did you just call him Nemo?
I did call him Nemo.
Okay.
And I almost called him Captain Nemo.
Okay.
The biggest thing I want to talk about is, and I'll say this, the purpose of a plot in a superhero movie is to move things along as quickly and logically as possible so we can watch superheroes fight.
Sure.
That's so I'm willing to let all this go. But the thing I'm fixating on is the tape. The tape is only in the one location and it's a tape that's now 30 years old and still in pretty good shape and the place has power and all these other things. But here's the thing that was crazy to me. We spent a good half an hour on this secret super soldier Hydra secret base up in Koldistan.
Siberia.
And that part of the plot went absolutely nowhere. We actually watched five super villains be sort of born. Then we assume they're frozen. Then they get shot in the head. And Bucky assumes Zemo is going up there to activate the soldiers.
Oh, everybody thinks that.
Which is why does he go all the way up there? And then how does he trick? But like, we didn't need that. We didn't need that whole subplot at all.
Right. And I think there's two reasons it's there. They're not going to satisfy you because that's your brain hitting the inside of the skull problem that I have.
Okay.
It's just never going to make sense and you're never going to approve it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have two reasons. One, because the Fortress of Fuckitude in Siberia is gorgeous to look at.
It was
right?
Nice.
It was really pretty and mm-hmm. it was built for superheroes fighting probably to the death.
Okay.
Right?
Sure.
And number two, probably the only place in the world that has a working VCR still.
That's a very good point. Because they walked out in 92. There was a labor strike.
I mean, they were
like, fuck you, comrade. I'm not come back anymore. And then that was it. And of course, nobody put away you know what the other thing is? They didn't put the VHS back in the sleeve and put it in the shelf.
Exactly.
They left
and
it in the player.
And they were unkind. They didn't fucking rewind.
They were unkind. They didn't rewind. And Bucky, like, let's be honest. People are bitching, like, why wouldn't he shoot the camera first? He's a good looking dude. He's been working on that hair for a while.
I know.
Have you seen the metal guns?
Yeah.
Hey, that don't come free, sister.
Yeah.
When you work on your metal guns that much, you want some chicks to look at that or dudes to look at that, whichever way you go.
I will say this. I did love. There's one beautiful moment when Iron Man and Cap are fighting
mm-hmm.
and they are fighting it out because they know only one person will win this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I think that I think I'm Team Cap for sure, because I believe that he believes it is worth losing his life over or killing his good friend over because he has the moral high ground. I don't think that Tony Stark feels the same way. I think he thinks it's worth it. I don't think he feels morally this is worth him dying for. He's just hoping he doesn't have to die. And I believe that because at the end, he bends a rule and joins Team Cap.
Are you saying Iron Man took a dive?
No, I'm saying that one of the things that changed Iron Man's perspective, because at the end, he kind of joins Team Cap. That's how this resolves.
Well, that's very helpful to the plot.
Right.
That he somehow gets secret information that Zemo needs him to get the set pieces in place.
Exactly.
It's, yes.
But that's not what I was going to talk about.
Okay,
so there's this scene where they're fighting, and Cap has the upper hand. And does this, it's two little tiny moments that for a superhero movie especially are quite poignant, I thought. He has the upper hand and they make eye contact and they both know that Cap can and probably will kill him right here.
Mm-hmm.
And Cap does something very, very poetic, which I feel uncomfortable spoiling even though it's a spoiler cast.
Hit it.
He crushes the arc reactor in the Iron Man suit, because then Tony can't beat Captain America. Then he's just Tony in a metal suit. And it's almost as heartbreaking as if he'd killed Iron Man, I thought. But then Tony's so broken and so hurt by the reveal on the tape and by the fight with Cap and all that other stuff that he's pouting like a little boy. He's saying, that's not even your shield. That's my dad made that. And Cap turns around and looks at him and drops the shield. And I thought that moment was so beautiful. I mean, it's a second. It happens in, like, it only is one beat on the screen. But he looks at him and he's like, yeah, but you know what? I'm Captain America with or without the shield. And he drops it.
It was good. And that, one of the weird dings I have on this as a storyteller and a creator is, Chris Evans playing Captain America, there's no flaw in that dude. Like, you can't, the only flaw, he's like the guy you don't want to interview at work. So tell me what your flaws are. Well, if anything, I work too hard and I'm too loyal. Like, that's the only thing going against Cap, is I'm loyal to the death to my buddy, my pal, going back to our days as kids. But that fight scene at the end, I take it back. It's two solid fight scenes. The airport fight scene was everything you could ever want out of a superhero, supervillain fight scene. That's what you read comic books for. I was delighted. I was seven and watching it. It was awesome and super fun. And then the last, and which was a very fun, lighthearted, intense fight scene. And then you get to the end of the movie where Captain America and Bucky are fighting Iron Man. And there is nothing fun about that. That was, you're holding on to the armrest, and it was grim and serious and sad.
I totally agree.
Sad as hell.
That was sort of the point I was making. Like, all of a sudden, me, who is like, yeah, you know, you can't really land on the earth in that Iron Man suit without being so, I am at the end, like, they're superheroes fighting each other to the death with their fists, essentially. And I'm all in, because it was so well choreographed and lit. And I think that's why you're at the Fortress of Fuckitude, right? You're really at the end of the earth. They're at the end of their relationship as Avengers, potentially. They're at the end. One of them might very well be at the end of his life. And it is still, because they're heroes, they are still fighting as hard and as fast and as true as they can.
So now we're going to go to questions.
Okay, I'm in. I'm ready, because I know everything about this movie. And I know everything about the Marvel Universe.
The first question comes from our good buddy, Justin Robert Young, who wants to know, can we talk about how sad the movie is?
I think we just did.
Well, there's more to it, though. What the scriptwriters did really well was introducing the concept of collateral damage. Now, if you're a comic book fan, a reader from back in the day, that you almost never hear anything about the collateral damage, but buildings collapse all the time. Planes get blown up. You use buses as weapons. And in the other Marvel movies, somebody throws a bus and Spider-Man catches that bus and it saves the people. Fantastic Four, everything. And in this one, they actually took a step, which, I haven't seen in any of the movies, which is, you guys knocked down an entire floating island country and several hundred people died. You blow things up in a building packed in an African city and boom, you know, there's 80 people die there. That kind of added a great tone, and that introduced some moral ambiguity to it, where they actually sat around the table debating about is what we're doing right? Should we have oversight and supervision? I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I just finished, I know you finished a while back when you were visiting Michigan with your family, but I just finished yesterday second season of Daredevil. And again, don't have a lot of history with comic books. I love Daredevil. I think it's well done. I think I have never seen Hell's Kitchen be so goddamn big.
It's
and
a
I'm
big
a New
place.
Yorker.
Yeah.
It's not that big really. But I am also like, I'm straining at the reality of he cannot get that hurt and fight that many people trying to kill him and never kill anyone. So for me, it's an interesting thing because even though they're superheroes with superpowers, that brings them, I don't know, this is probably sacrilege to say, but one of the things I like about the X-Men is all of them struggle because they are the minority. They're not heroes. They're subjugated in a minority at the beginning of their lives as their powers manifest. And have to struggle with, like, I just want to be like everybody else. I just want to be, like, why can't you walk your, like, why can't I walk to school with my mom? Like, you can walk to school with your mom. So I agree with you. It introduces a lot of moral ambiguity to the hero, the epic hero idea. But I think that, you know, at this point, they're hero superpowers are so well manifest in our in the legend in our mind, they can be a little more like us.
Yeah,
they can screw up and be human.
And that's what they've done a very good job. The whole Marvel Cinematic Universe, TV, everything has done a good job. They are us. Same difficulties, same moral compass twisting. They're not sure what to do. They also just happen to be able to shoot blasts out of their hands and all of those things. And the superpowers really become absolutely secondary to all of the other things going on with these characters and their dynamics and their relationships.
Except for maybe Ant-Man.
Ant-Man, yeah.
Because Ant-Man, especially in this movie, is all about his ability and his superpower. And
it was super fun. Yeah. What they did with Ant-Man was, I didn't see that coming, which was ridiculous. I should have seen it. So now we got at C Delicious, Daryl Mansell has two quick questions. Number one, do you think the Sokovia Accords would work in real life? And where would you rank Zemo in the Marvel Cinematic Universe villain list, considering he's the only villain that's ever succeeded?
Interesting.
I think the Sokovia Accords are, from a real life perspective, absolutely and utterly ridiculous. America would ever give up that weapon capability and put it under the oversight of an international board of countries. I don't think that's possible.
We did that with nuclear weapons, which is the closest thing we have to superhero.
The UN
power.
Does not control any of our nuclear weapons.
No, but the Oslo Accords changed things, right? So we demilitarized our nuclear weapons and we weaponized our warheads. In a collateral step down with other powers that were nuclear powers. Mm-hmm. And so now we have less ability to blow each other.
That's a good point. But whose finger's on the trigger? UN's finger. It's our finger.
And it's two things. I think it's anybody who has that power and certainly governed by governments at large. Like I don't think it's just us and whatever remains of the USSR that has, or whoever has nuclear power, the seven of us going like, all right, let's step it back. Mm-hmm. I think there's definitely oversight, but I agree with you that I think we have control. I also think, not positive, but I think we certainly have enough active warheads to do a lot of damage.
Oh, sure. So, which is why we had way more than we could ever use or need. So we were more than happy to be like, oh yeah, here you go. Have these 100. We got these over here.
Well, there's no, here you go. Let's de-weaponize these.
Sure. Sure. So, but we disagree there. And then where would you rank Zemo in Marvel Cinematic? I don't know. He's way better than Ultron.
And
I'll tell you that.
Way better than Captain Nemo.
No one's better than Captain Nemo.
Okay.
You take that back.
What about Little Nemo, Finding Nemo.
What if Finding Nemo becomes a captain? Then what happens?
Well, he has that little tiny flipper, so I don't think he can handle the steering.
I thought the guy who played Zemo did a really good job. I thought the plot was, as we've covered, was, we'll call it intricate. We'll call it a necessary vehicle to get us where we want to be in a superhero movie, which is watch people beat the shit out of each other. I hope he comes back. I would like to see more of him, and hopefully he'll have some damn superpowers.
And I'm not so sure that he succeeded. He partially succeeded, I'll give him that. But his stated goal in the movie was he would create an internal damage to the Avengers that was so great that they couldn't surmount it, and that would destroy the country from within. As he says,
he wanted to bring down an empire. Did he want to bring down the country did he want to bring down the Avengers? Because you just
what I'm
said
saying.
It.
He's like, well, right. He wanted to bring down the Avengers, but I don't think he did that.
Yeah, I don't think so. Failed. So, fail, son.
Partial win. I'd say partial win. They're fractured. But I mean, the last thing that happens before the scenes during the credits is Cap and Iron Man making as much amends as probably Tony Stark makes to say like, yeah, okay, no, we can work with this. Let's work together.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see. And I think we're waiting for the next installment in the series then, which will be Captain America and 17 other characters. Inna Reeds asks, Bucky Barnes's character development, parentheses, or lack thereof, in parentheses, also forced romance between Steve and Sharon Carter. She's asking us to discuss those two things. What's Bucky going to do? Well, honestly, how is he going to have, how are you possibly going to give this character any character development? He's an international assassin whose mind has been controlled and he just wants to hide and buy some plums. All the dude wants, I just want to buy a goddamn plum and have some sun on my face. And you bastards are framing me for killing the UN.
Well, I think that, which is a fascinating throwaway line in a comic book movie after we've just been discussing that it is possible that this movie was not made for our demographic. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of his character development backstory up until now comes in a throwaway line from Tony Stark when he's like, really? Come on, Manchurian Candidate, let's get there. Mm-hmm. And there's a million people who watched this movie who are 17 years old
who were like,
I have no idea what that is. And that was, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes into a 2-hour movie. So they're never going to look it up. Mm-hmm. But that says everything you need to know about Bucky right now. He didn't choose it. He doesn't want it. He can't control it. He can't see it in his own brain. It says a ton about it. I mean, I don't know that Sinatra would ever, ever have had the hair Bucky has, because that would not have flown. But otherwise, very much like the Manchurian Candidate. So I think there is a lot of character development if you understand that one throwaway line. And if not, you can certainly do that, because we don't know anything about Spider-Man either.
And his final decision to go back into sleep till they can fix him, that's absolutely a character arc right there.
He's heroic.
Yeah, it's heroic. So there is character development there. And then the forced romance between Steve and Sharon Carter. When I left, I was like happy that I didn't get the typical boy meets girl, girl and boy get together. Oh, she gets kidnapped. She died. He's got to get revenge. But they did force a tiny bit of romance in there, like one smooch. But I mean, is that just checklist? Did they have to do that?
No, I mean, I have no idea, but I do like that what she says, he says that was, and she says overdue. And that's it. So maybe it was throwaway. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's okay. Maybe chicks will like it if there's a smooch in there. Who knows is what the idea there is. But I don't think it impacts the whole storyline so much, because she still has the power that she has and, whatever. So I think it's neither here nor there for me.
Here's a side question. How creepy is that? He's 100 years older than she is. Is this like a Team Edward thing? I want to know what's going on. I know she's a grown-ass woman. She can do whatever she wants. Go get yourself some, sister. And it's not like going after Steve Ross, obviously. That's Rogers. Steve Rogers. No-brainer. But then, looking at it, he's 100 years older than her. That's creepy. That's grandpa.
Look, I'm just going to say, if my grandpa looked like Captain fucking America, or I guess your grandpa looked like Captain Man on mine, that'd be creepy.
Listen, but if your aunt looked like Marissa Tomei, I hear you. I feel you. I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, because we also, of course, forget that over and over and over again. And it's easy to forget because he didn't live those 100 years through.
I'm being problematic.
Yeah,
that's what I'm going after.
Shocker.
And then two more, I think. And Osmond has Buckshank.
Of course.
Which is great. I love you. Actually, it's a little Twitter name, a little help. Should they find a way to bring Zemo back as a strategist planner? Well, that's what supervillains are. That's what the master villain is. They're strategist planners. He'll be back. He's going to cause some damage. That's what I think.
Right. Thoughts? I mean, he even says that, right? He says, because Frodo or Bilbo Baggins says to him, that character, Martin, whatever his name is, Bilbo Baggins, is all, how does it feel to be in this glass cage and know that your plot failed? And he says, did it?
Please step out of line so I can shove a cattle prod up your rectum. Was that a line too? I heard that in the movie.
Well, I didn't hear that. That might have been in the Lord of the Rings, though.
Oh, yeah, the big spooky dudes and the horses. They did a lot of cattle prodding and a lot of rectums. And then the last question is,
I think that's Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah, okay. there's all kinds of craziness. Montana Tim Tharp is asking us to discuss, don't like our superheroes having to fight each other. No more bad guys. Tim, let me tell you a story. Once upon a time, Tim, there was a plucky young man from Kansas. He came from Kansas and he went to the big city. He went to LA. He wanted to make movies. And he was a comic book fan. Let's call him John. And John went and met a guy named Stan. And together they wanted to make these comics together. They wanted to put out movies. And you know what happens, Tim? They write all these great supervillains and they have all this action. And the movie studio says, listen, we're tired of watching all of these amazing superhero battles. Let's just have you fight a shit ton of robots. Poorly constructed robots that fall apart at the drop of a hat. Robots that should be able to wipe out entire armies, but when Scarlet Witch blinks at them, they collapse into nothing. So I don't care who they fight as long as it's not robots.
Okay, well, wow.
Yeah, Age of Ultron, come on, how many robots are there?
Well, so I think that everybody's a little bit superhero. Everybody's a little bit supervillain, even if you're a superhero.
I'm a little bit supervillain. I'm a little bit like that. Yeah, that's like Donnie Marie. There's a reference the kids won't get.
I was just about to say, I prefer you ranting against Age of Ultron than talking about Donnie and Marie.
I thought, I don't care who's fighting who to give me the airport scene and get to see all these powers and all the craziness that happened there and all the fun in that scene. I don't give a crap. Because yeah, you know, the other thing is, you if they play the supervillains, you know they're going to lose to supervillains in battle number one, battle number two, and they're going to win battle number three. This is how the formula works. But when it's two sets of superheroes fighting each other, you're not entirely sure how that's going to go down. Mm-hmm. And I mean, at the end of that fight, we wind up with three guys in jail. That's not a typical superhero outing.
No, true. And I also think that that's not going to matter all that much because you don't actually, you know, were the accords totally signed because everything blew up and blah, 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 blah.
The Kagovich Accords?
Sokovia Accords.
Yeah.
So I don't really know that it matters, but I agree with you. I like the heroes fighting heroes introduces humanity to them. And hero status to humans like us, mm-hmm. which means everybody can make a good choice and a bad choice, including a superhero. So I'm all for some moral ambiguity. I will also say, in a comic book world where the heroes never die, you know, a little strife in their life is not a bad necessarily a bad thing.
Also, there was some ass kicking and there were explosions. And thank God somebody finally used a plane as a weapon. I've been waiting for that for a while. There were trucks thrown, lots of things blowing up. It was very satisfying. 7-year-old Scott was very happy with that fight scene. Thought it went very well. Mm-hmm. Very mm-hmm. well. Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to cover about this movie? Our spoiler cast of Captain America and 17 other characters, Civil War.
So I think I've covered everything I need to cover. I will say I do the pop culture fan in me loves that Stan Lee shows up in every movie. Mm-hmm. And this one was a super cute. It was the Venn diagram of all things giant blockbuster movie. Mm-hmm. It was huge, enormous product placement. It was also sassy, very Stan Lee-ish. Yep. And he looked just like him. There was no reporter's hat. He looked exactly like Stan Lee in a FedEx uniform.
Yes.
And it was funny as fuck. So I love that.
When Stan Lee dies, which will probably be in the next 10 minutes, are they going to have the reanimated That's corpse of Stan Lee coming into these movies? I think they should. I think they should like make a little marionette of him and they should bring him in. And you can see the strings. That's okay. Cause you know, he's dead. Cause it'll be in the news, but then you would still get to see Stan Lee and like a guy with a stick can work his lower jaw. And then they can like, hey, welcome to the building. I'm the building manager. And then that would be Stan Lee and we would be so happy.
I don't think so. I don't think anybody, including you, would be happy with that, actually.
The animated corpse of Stan Lee?
Sir, you bitch. One, it wouldn't be animated. It would be a marionette. And number two, you bitch about all sorts of shit that nobody cares about with superhero movies. You're going to tell me you're not going to bitch with a corpse in the movie?
I'd be super happy to see corpse Stan Lee. Absolutely. Tickled pink. Tickled pink.
But here's what I do think they will do. I think he'll be, somebody's framed photo of his granddad. Something like that. On the wall, in the house.
Okay.
You know, like in Daredevil, there's the Punisher has like a piano in his house and there's a big wall of framed photos. Mm-hmm. I think Stan Lee will be in that. That's what I think.
Okay, that'd be cool. That'd be cool. I'm going to go ahead and start an online petition for mine, reanimated corpse of Stan Lee in all the future Marvel Cinematic Universe movies after Stan Lee dies in the next 7 minutes.
I think one, it's shitty that you think he'll die tonight and you're going to be feeling
Dude, he's
really
like,
bad.
He's like a piece of gristle with a mustache. I mean, he's great, but he's old. He's real. Let's be honest. Let's be honest.
Hopefully, I would love to be as old as he is.
Hey, listen.
And live as old as
he has already defeated Logan's Run like three times over.
Oof, what a great movie.
Yeah. So I think we'll all love him. We'll all be sad.
I'm pretty sure before you do something else super duper offensive to comic book fans or reference yet another 1970s thing that most people listening won't understand, we should just say goodbye, Scott Sigler.
Okay. Goodbye, guys.
Come back on Sunday, get your newest episode of Alight, and we'll talk to you real soon. You've been listening to The Friday Fix, a production of Empty Set Entertainment. Want to hear more of Scott Sigler? Find his fiction in bookstores everywhere or at Amazon.com. And tune into his weekly fiction podcast to get free, serialized, unabridged audiobooks. Get the podcast at ScottSigler.com or subscribe directly through iTunes at ScottSigler.com/iTunes.